Sagittarius, and happy birthday and welcome to your 2014-15 birthday reading, which will be in three sections, two sections of astrology, then a third section of astrology afterthoughts, and a tarot reading in where we will switch modes and read pictures rather than this one picture. Pattern-rich image of the Sagittarius new moon, which is the chart that I'm using. Sagittarius new moon occurred on moments after the sun entered Sagittarius. That is a little era that we are in with the new moon taking place on the day of the sun's ingress into a sign, and it was a rather glorious event for Sagittarius, and we'll talk about that whole chart and the stories that this chart tells. One thing about astrology is that in the style of Sagittarius, it is something of an experience of information overload, and therefore the patterns in the chart are the natural resting place, and the patterns build on one another, and they interrelate with one another, and they are the thing from which the story is born. All, of course, in the mind of the perceiver, who is both of us as I'm reading this chart, and you are listening to my words. We're both interpreting. You're interpreting me, and I am interpreting this beautiful little figure that I've got in front of me. And I've been thinking about this chart for weeks, and about your reading for a while, and I would say that the main pattern that I see, I would summarize as a message from your chart to be true to yourself at all times. Now, this is such a basic thing to say, to think, to teach, and yet that is the, I think, the inherent message. The planet around which this story revolves, in my opinion, is not in Sagittarius. As you know, the whole chart tells the story of each sign from a different viewpoint. The sign we're talking about, in this case Sagittarius or Sag rising, becomes the point of view, the figure, and the background really tells the story, because it the figure and the background define each other, and the thing in the background that is speaking, though it speaks softly, is Neptune, and that would be Neptune in Pisces. And Pisces, for you, is your fourth house. That is your fourth solar house, if we're talking about Sagittarius Sun. Your fourth house by whole sign houses, if we're talking about someone with Sagittarius rising. And the fourth house, sometimes called the fourth place, the fourth part is the part that counts the most, is that of your security base, the foundation on which you stand, and that is the sign Pisces. Now, when we think about Sagittarius, we think about what many people would say is by far the most cosmic sign, the most out there, the most exotic, the one that represents things that are distant, that are unusual, that are that possess unworldly or otherworldly wisdom. And I think that is true. I think that it's easily observed in astrology and in astronomy. Thankfully, we all have access to Sagittarius. Some people tune it in, some people don't. And that part of that story is told by your fourth house, by the house that is the foundation, the taproot. And that is Pisces, the fourth sign away from Sagittarius. And as the fourth sign, it talks about a diversity of things, including your security base. It describes certain elements of your childhood and your family origins, the story of your family of origin, and the both psychic and physical spaces of your family. And what is so interesting about having Pisces here, which is something true all the time, is it's not very solid. It is the most watery water sign. It is a mutable water sign. It's the last sign of the zodiac. In Pisces, everything is disseminating. All of the colors are coming out. There's reality as we know it dissolves into the ocean no matter what else happens. Whether a river is cutting a canyon or a forest burns, eventually everything ends up in the ocean. And so though your sign is a fire sign, a mutable fire sign, which is interesting by itself in that the mutable signs tend to be the most passive, but there's nothing passive about Sagittarius, that the sign that your chart is built on, the foundation that Sagittarius is built on, is the foundation of the ocean. It is the foundation of the origins of existence being in the water. Come from the water, we return to the water. And I think that though Sagittarius represents some very far out things, this world of water is where you draw your true strength and your true power. And it's very difficult to see this because Pisces has an invisible quality. It is the sign of things that we take for granted. It is the sign of the emotional and the mental environment that we live that we don't typically see and don't understand easily and don't recognize for what it is until there are certain factors that help us focus on that environment and see what it is. And right now, you have that. That is a very large part of the story, not just of this year, but of this entire era of your life. I would say an era going back to about 2010 and leading up at least till 2020, a 10-year era about which we are right in the middle of right now, entering 2015. So we are, you know, halfway through this story, right around when you start to get into the book and realize what an awesome book that it is, and hope that it never ends. Unfortunately, in this particular book, there's a good way to go. Now, the 2010 thing is Chiron beginning its trek across Pisces, and that influence may have woken you up to certain disagreeable factors of your childhood environment. The first thing you may have become aware of as Chiron entered Pisces were the things that you took with you, influences that you took with you, deceptions that you took with you, things that you did not necessarily agree with, things that were in some way injurious to you, that were hurtful. And what Chiron has a way of doing is opening up that past struggle and bringing things that were invisible into focus, especially in Pisces. And so there has been this process, gradual at times, and then, for example, around the time of year of your birthday or late in any season, like when the sun is in Virgo or the sun is in your opposite sign, Gemini, or in Pisces, rapidly accelerated. Notice this pattern, or at least maybe, you know, check out and see if this is true, that late in the season are times when you tend to do the most growth, right before the new season begins, said another way, right before the summer begins, right before the winter begins, the sun is in one of these mutable signs, and that creates an acceleration effect. And the larger story here is about making peace with your past. It is about understanding and, most of all, being honest with yourself about your prior history. And so if the theme of this year, as I see it, is being true to yourself, the first place to focus that light of truth is on your relationship to your past, because everything hinges around that. And the relationship to the past also includes your relationship to the stories that you were told about the past, the stories you were told about previous generations, the story you were told of your origins and how it is that you got to be the person that you are, your understanding of why things are the way they are, and the way in which people, some of whom you may really not agree with, shaped you into the person that you are. Now, while we're on that subject, I would, for the sake of a more linear presentation, put that off, but I want to focus on that so I don't, first of all, don't forget that, because I was not expecting to talk about that particular analysis of a relationship when you understand that you have been shaped by people who you do not necessarily agree with their worldview, nor necessarily respect that much, or you may have a real beef with how they treated you and what they did to you and how you emerged from that. And one thing that I have noticed in this relationship to the past, and I've done more work on one side of my family with this than on the other, but I am pretty sure that I have been able to really extract the most of the positive elements from what I would say are quite a few people that I've had some real respect issues with in terms of their not having ever earned my respect and done quite a bit to lose what respect they had, at least initially, that the example from one generation to the next is not always a direct transfer of that set of qualities. And the problem with the transfer from one generation to the next is that we're so emotionally close to it. We're so close to our grandparents that it's almost like slipping a sheet of carbon paper between two pieces of paper and only going through those two generations, and then suddenly we are produced. And so I think that, for example, our grandparents' and great-grandparents' generation is far closer to us than we realize, making our common ground with our parents almost synonymous with them in a way, and yet they are influential in ways that we might not like that much. And what I want to say about this is that that transfer of tendencies is not always and does not need to be, and I think can be reclaimed as something other than I have some inevitable outcome as this thing that I really don't want to be. And I think that to the contrary of that, there is the necessity to, well, it's very helpful, though not everyone has this, but to have the opportunity to have something to push back against, something to rub or scrape or resist in some way, and that that resistance can shape you very well into the original and beneficent person that you are, regardless of what neglect there may have been, regardless of what struggles you may have been subjected to of people who raised you, your caregivers. And what I think anyone who grew up in our era would be, you know, wise to recognize is the struggle of parenting in this very difficult era that I would say extends from the Great Depression through World War II and then into the 50s and 60s and 70s, because it has been a very difficult time in terms of the conflicting demands of society in raising children, and very nearly every child is neglected, and many, Alice Miller would say, all children are subjected to emotional and or physical abuse and neglect. And when you start to look at this, this is very painful to see. And yet what Chiron is offering is the ability to see the ways in which standing out from your upbringing is as important as the ways in which your upbringing influenced you to be like the people who were influencing you. That this time of differentiating yourself, of distinguishing yourself, and of understanding the power of your experiences, negative though they may have been, is incomparable. And that in addition, going past the myth of the happy childhood is absolutely a necessary step of healing in this era, because one of the ways that we can cover over the pain of what has become a kind of culturally endemic neglect and abuse is by telling ourselves a happy story. And so one of the things that Chiron has been doing over these years has been scratching through that surface and giving you, I think, a simultaneous opportunity to see what were obviously significant problems, and then at the same time to claim the ways in which this shaped you in ways that you simply could not have been shaped had you not had these experiences. And for anyone who is not at the point where they're seeing this as a positive, I recognize how difficult it can be to, just kind of say, this is all for the better. When what you really want to say is, you people actually knew better. You people had the intelligence and you had the resources and you didn't do those few things that you could have done. And I get that phase, and I think that if you're in that phase, it's an important phase to be in. And I would also offer you the reading, in a sense, that's what I'm doing here, that you are now at this point where you really can extract elements, and if you think of them as like chemical constituents and things that have been synthesized in you, particularly in your spiritual quest, in your ability to be creative, and in your quest for faith in yourself, that you can extract things that would have that have profound use and are helpful to you and to others, that fortify your whole existence, and that you would not have had any other way. There just would have not been another way to recreate, to have another kind of environment that would give you what you got. And I would just, propose, daring to think that maybe it was the right thing. Maybe despite the difficulty, despite whatever, that the right thing happened, and that as you see that, you will be more inclined to take ownership of your creative and spiritual and emotional and psychic assets, which are really actually all you have. You have your body, and you have what you do with your experience. Now, Chiron is not the only actor in this house, and with so much circulating here, I'm going to get into other houses that tell this story in other ways. There's another point here, which I'm not going to dwell on too much, but that is called Borsisi. And Borysici and Chiron are going to be in a, they have been in a conjunction, but that conjunction now will reach its exact contact twice in 2016 and then a 15 and the third time in 2016. So when the conjunction is exact, that is a kind of a cusp point. That's a culmination. There can be an emergence of something where you can see, you know, you can have the sensation of putting the pieces together, of combining the elements in a certain way. And at the end of the day, the story of Borysici is the power of what you believe to be true. Now, I know that it's a dangerous argument to say that belief creates reality, but at least in the internal world, in the world within one's emotions and within one's psychic field, belief is very powerful in terms of the way in which it acts, for example, as a filter of what information we will allow ourselves to be exposed to. It acts as a filter of what elements of history we are willing to see and the interpretation of those elements of history. And so I would say that the message of Chiron conjunct Borysici as it develops in 2015 and 2016 is to at least be aware of the power of belief. Monitor that very carefully, because that power of belief is mediating more of your reality than you may know right now, and yet at the same time, it is necessary to see the power of belief working before you actually can have the full revelation that the power of belief is the thing that is influencing your environment and your experience. And it is not necessarily able to change everything, and yet it can lead to the sequence of events and to the, you might say, freedom of mind to be able to gradually change everything. And sometimes one decision, one perception, one revelation, one point of understanding can be the thing that becomes the foothold in a complete recreation of your life. And so I would not discount anything. And indeed, I would suggest that you be on a hunt, a vigilant search for things that you believe that are not true, and that when you encounter something that you believe that is not true and are able to change your mind, that you consciously pause and celebrate that discovery. Okay, now the more recent planet to have moved into Pisces is the modern ruler of Pisces. Many planets have modern and traditional rulers. Pisces is one of them. There is really no doubt that Neptune is associated with Pisces. It is pretty much the perfect match. And that has been since, I guess, 2000, and I think that was a transition from 11 to 12, Neptune ingressing Pisces. And this has done a few things. First of all, it has allowed a refreshing of the waters of Pisces. It's been a long time since Neptune was in Pisces, very nearly two centuries since Neptune, since before the American Civil War, Neptune was last in Pisces. And that is something to, you know, be fully conscious of. Well, I'm before the Civil War, right around the time of the Civil War. I've got to just check the cycles and the official dates of that, but it's we're talking the 18th century. That's a while. That's longer than anyone remembers. And we are the first people to ever be experiencing Neptune in Pisces who have a memory of that. And what Neptune in Pisces does, I believe, is it brings water, which Neptune really is a gigantic ball of water and gas, back to Pisces and allows a refreshing. It's like opening up a dam and allowing new water from upstream to pour into the pond. And this pond is the pool of your emotions. And by the way, the presence of Pisces here is one reason why I believe that Sagittarius is misunderstood by most of astrology as being a sign predominantly associated with fire, when really there are vital elements that would contribute to self-understanding if you think of yourself perhaps a little bit more as a creature of water. And that is especially true under the influence of Neptune. The problem with Neptune is it is possible to delude yourself. And when this new moon happened in Sagittarius in the first degree, indeed, at 7 arc minutes, about a tenth of a degree in, it was square Neptune. And when there's a square to Neptune, there is a very loud, clear invitation to seek clarity. And so while there is this process of the waters refreshing themselves, there is also a repeated message to seek clarity. And the thing is, that clarity may not strictly be mental clarity, and yet the lack of mental clarity can contribute to the confusing effects of Neptune. Today, as I speak, let's just take a quick check here. Mercury recently entered Sagittarius and is exactly less than 1 degree partile, exactly splitting that fifth degree square Neptune. And this repeats that message. We are inevitably doing this reading under the influence of squares to Neptune. And squares to Neptune just raise the priority rating of the be honest with yourself message. Now, how do you do that? Well, in the chart that I use for the solar return for the purposes of this reading, there is an example here. And that example is a conjunction of Mercury and Saturn in Scorpio, which is your 12th house. This is back on the 22nd on Saturday, I guess 1 week ago. And the implication of this is, it is an image of keeping secrets from yourself. So one strategy for being dishonest with oneself is to keep secrets from oneself. Now, how do you keep secrets from yourself? Well, that is denial. And that there's a always, when Neptune is present, a strong reminder of denial. And so what I'm suggesting is, given the power, for example, of Mercury square Neptune, as I am actually doing this reading at 1:17 p.m. on Sunday the 30th, is to overemphasize that point of honesty and to look for the secrets that you may be keeping. Look for the subject matter that you are afraid to look into. Experiment with the emotions that you may find difficult and disturbing. Specifically, search out those elements as a quest. The questing spirit being the thing about Sagittarius that I think above all else defines it as Sagittarius. The ability to focus, the ability to seek the truth as a way of life. And I'm suggesting something just slightly different here, which is not seeking the truth, but rather seeking that which is not true for 1 year as a point of dharma, as the thing that you are doing your little bit to hold the world together. Go on a hunt for what is not true and catalog it. Be grateful when you find it and understand the influence of those influences that were not true. So there's lots and lots and lots of ways to do this, and a good few of them look as if they involve something about ancestors, something about family, something about family history. There may, for example, be a family story. We'll give an example of a family story. That's the accepted folklore in the family. That's who that guy was. That was that guy's big triumph. That was the one thing that person did. That's how our family got to be what it is, where it is. That's why everyone's so messed up, et cetera, et cetera. There may be some central delusion in the way that that story is being told or interpreted, or even the very fact, its very fact may be wrong. The basis of it may be wrong, and the wrongness of it is not an accident. The wrongness of it looks like it is some kind of a scrim thrown over what really happened. This would be especially true if someone was made into a bad person, if there's some element of this turn of events that, you know, has been passed down to you, where someone was made, portrayed as evil, they're the cause of the problem, et cetera, et cetera. That's something that deserves closer scrutiny. And I would remind you that the perception of people who are in your immediate family and your self-image and the image that others have of you, or they have that they have taught you to have of yourself, is very closely related to the past. And that is why, in my perception here as a kind of a reader and storyteller of these dots on the page, that understanding what's not true is going to help you understand what is not true about yourself. And when you can unravel what is not true, it is then that you are able to discover what is true, what always was true, without that obstacle, without that thing to trip over or that you were running into. And so in this sense, the use of deception and delusion becomes a highly profitable enterprise, because if you can look at things with scrutiny and with objectivity, right? Not assuming that that's just, you know, grandma feels very strongly about that. Grandma hates so-and-so. And you've heard this story since before you can remember, just to give one hypothetical example. Or your mother had this certain feeling about maybe one of her parents, or maybe about an in-law. These families are full of these opinions. And what I'm suggesting here is that these opinions that other people seemingly have of others are the thing that is most likely to be blocking your accurate perception of yourself. And when you can see that for what it is and remove it, you are much more likely to have an accurate perception of yourself. And so this is what I'm getting at when I'm talking about, you know, keeping secrets from yourself. Now, there may be much more mundane levels of this. There may be, you know, things that you suspect about someone that you make up a little story so that you don't have to, you know, engage, confront, acknowledge what may be true. And I would suggest that making that list of things that you suspect are true and things that you know to be true and things that you don't know, three main categories, things that you suspect, things that you know for sure, and things that you know that you don't know, is a powerful tool for being able to suss out the truth. And when you study the relationships of these things and you start to see how your perception is acting and you start to notice the influence, in particular of the past, on your perception of the moment, you will see the world with very wide and accurate eyes and not be blinded by all of these myths that are passed down to us and kind of like are spewing out of the rearview mirror. So I would suggest here that that understanding the past is the best way to get yourself into the present and to remember that the present is your friend and it is the place where you really want to be. All right, this is a good pausing point. I related things that I frankly don't have in my notes and had no intention of saying, but that is what came out. So I'm going to give you a chance to stop and contemplate some of this and I will be back in a digital instant with a little more wider survey of your chart and some of the influences that are at work. A pleasure working for you. Back in a digital instant.